The paper that week was devoted to Mr. Wilson Caudle. I pulled out some old photos from the archives and plastered them all over the front page. We ran testimonial stories and lots of paid announcements of sympathy from his many friends. I then rehashed everything I'd written about him into the longest obituary in the history of the newspaper. Spot deserved it. I wasn't sure what to do with the story about Malcolm Vince. He was not a resident of Ford County, thus not entirely eligible for an obituary. Our rules were quite flexible when it came to that issue. A prominent Ford Countyan who'd moved away would still qualify for an obituary, but obviously there had to be something to write about. One who'd just passed through the county and either had no family or contributed little could not qualify. Such was the case of Malcolm Vince. If I exaggerated the story, the Pagets would get the satisfaction of further intimidating the county. They would frighten us again. Of those who'd heard of the killing, no one thought it might be the work of anyone other than the Pagets. If I ignored the story, then I would be running scared and shirking my responsibility as a journalist. Baggy thought it was front page material, but there was no room when I was finished with our farewell to Mr. Caudle. I ran it at the top of page 3 with the headline, Paget Witness Murdered in Tishomingo County. My first headline had been Malcolm Vince Murdered in Tishomingo County, but Baggy felt strongly that we should use the Paget name with the word murdered in the headline. The story was 300 words. I drove to Corinth to snoop around. Harry Rex gave me the name of Malcolm's divorce lawyer, a local act who went by the name of Pud Perryman. His office was on Main Street between a barbershop and a Chinese seamstress, and when I opened the door, I immediately knew that Mr. Perryman was the least successful lawyer I would ever meet. The place reeked of lost cases, dissatisfied clients, and unpaid bills. The carpet was stained and threadbare. The furniture was left over from the 50s. A rancid haze of old and new cigarette smoke hung in layers dangerously close to my head. Mr. Perryman himself showed no signs of prosperity. He was around 45, pot-bellied, unkempt, unshaven, red-eyed. The last hangover was wearing off slowly. He informed me he was a divorce and property guy, and I was supposed to be impressed by this. Either he didn't charge enough, or he attracted clients with little to sell or fight over. He hadn't seen Malcolm in a month, he said as he looked for a file among the landfill that covered his desk. The divorce had never been filed. His efforts to work out an agreement with Lydia's lawyer had gone nowhere. "She flew the coop," he said. "Beg your pardon?" "She's gone. Packed up after the trial over there and hit the road. Took the kid, vanished." I really didn't care what happened to Lydia. I was much more concerned with who shot Malcolm. Pud offered a couple of vague theories, but they broke down after a few basic questions. He reminded me of Baggy, a local courthouse gossip monger who'd make up a rumor if he doesn't hear a new one within an hour. Lydia had no boyfriends or brothers or anyone else who might want to shoot Malcolm in the heat of a bad divorce. And of course, there was no divorce. The bad blood hadn't even begun. Mr. Perryman gave the impression of one who preferred to prattle and tell lies all day, as opposed to tending to his files. I was in his office for almost an hour, and when I finally managed to leave, I ran outside for fresh air. I drove 30 minutes to Iuka, the Tishomingo County seat, where I found Sheriff Spinner just in time to buy him lunch. Over barbecued chicken in a crowded cafe, he brought me up to date on the murder. It was a clean hit by someone who knew the area well. They had found nothing, no footprints, no shell casings, nothing. The weapon had been a .44 Magnum, and the two shots had practically blown off Malcolm's head. For drama, he unholstered his service revolver and passed it over. "This is a .44," he said. It was twice as heavy as my meager weapon. I lost what little appetite I had. They had talked to every acquaintance they could find. Malcolm had lived in the area for about 5 months. He had no criminal record, no arrests, no reports of fistfights, no dice shooting, disturbances, or drunken brawls. He went to the talk once a week where he shot pool and drank beer and never raised his voice. There were no loans or bills past due for more than 60 days. There appeared to be no illicit affairs or jealous husbands. "I can't find a motive," the sheriff said. "It doesn't make sense." I told him about Malcolm's testimony in the Paget trial and about how Danny threatened the jury. He listened intently and said little afterward. I got the clear impression he preferred to stay in Tishomingo County and wanted no part of the Pagets. "That could be your motive," I said when I finished.
"Revenge?"
"Sure. These are nasty people."
"Oh, I've heard of them. Guess we're lucky we weren't on that jury, huh?"
Driving back to Clanton, I could not erase the image of the sheriff's face when he said that. Gone was the swagger of a well-armed man of the law. Spinner was truly grateful he was two counties away and had nothing to do with the Pagets. His investigation was dead. Case closed.